all of us have motivation of some sort. I define motivation as the desire to achieve that which you believe to be worthwhile. And many people go through life never getting in touch with their greatness because of the lack of motivation to push themselves, or because they have not found something that they believe to be worthwhile to challenge them.
I believe that's the single most important element that separates the quality of people's lives. It's not just the ability to have hunger, but to sustain it. Hunger means that you want more. You want more of yourself, you want to make a bigger difference, you want to be a better parent, you want to do something more than there is today, and that you don't get satisfied. Most people start out with hunger at an early stage of life and they lose it. But the people that come to me are hungry either because something's happened, they've had a birthday with a zero on it, they've gone through a divorce, they're starting a business and they know I've got to have a different level, or they're the best in the world and they're always looking for that edge that makes the difference.
One of the things that we must do is that we must be involved in working on achieving self-mastery. You must work on yourself continuously. Never be satisfied with yourself. Always know that as you invest the effort and time on you, that's the greatest ability that human beings have above animals. See, a dog can't be anything but a dog. Tree can't be anything but a tree. Human being, you've got unlimited potential. You can put effort on you, and by concentrating on you and developing you, you can transform your life wherever you are right now.
If you want to do anything worthwhile in life, you've got to be hungry. You got to be hungry. Begin to know that you have greatness within you. And if just one of you here begin to envision yourselves as being blessed and highly favored to reach your goals, if just one of you capture the essence of what that means, that you have greatness within you and a responsibility to manifest that greatness, that you can make your parents proud, you can make your school proud, you can touch millions of people's lives, and the world will never be the same again because you came this way.
True champions get hungrier every time they win. Winners dominate losers. Legends dominate winners.
Now is your time. Now's the time where the talking is done. Now is the moment where you got to make a decision. And the decision is simply this: are you ready to take the next step?
One of my favorite quotes is by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. He said, "The heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night." What does that mean? You got to work. You got to do some doing this. You can't just sit around and hope it'll happen. One of the steps, one of the actions you need to take is called asking. And many of us, see, we wrote a book, Mark and I wrote a book called Dare to Win. And it was a book of all these kind of things, and people went out and they read the book, and still a lot of people weren't successful. And we thought, what's the problem here? And as we began to analyze and interview people, we realized one of the main things that was blocking most people was the fear of asking for what they wanted. They wouldn't go up and just say, "Can I borrow money? Will you support my dream? Will you volunteer for school? Will you lend me your car?" Whatever it is they need, they were so afraid of being rejected. And so we wrote a book called The Aladdin Factor, How to Ask for and Get Everything You Want. And we were doing all that research, we ran across a girl named Marquita Andrews. And Marquita Andrews was the living example of what we call ask. Because you're going to have to ask a lot of people. And Marquita, her mother, when she was a little girl, came up to her and said, "You know, Marquita, I have a dream. My dream is to travel around the world, but I also have a dream for you. I want you to graduate college. Problem is, I'm a waitress. I don't see how I can underwrite both dreams on a waitress's salary. But I'll make a deal with you. If you'll go to college and agree that after you graduate, you'll take 25% of your income for the first number of years and put that in savings to send me around the world, then I'll pay for your college education. But if you're not willing to do that, then I don't know if I want to pay for your college education." Well, what is she? She's like 7 or 9 at the time. She goes, "Sure, deal," you know? Well, later that year, she joins the Brownie Scouts. And the Brownies are part of the Girl Scouts, and they came out with their annual cookie drive. And they had a contest that year. Girl who sells most cookies wins trip for two around the world. Marquita says, I'm getting out of this one easy, right? So she starts selling cookies like you can't believe. Now, in her first year as a Brownie Scout, she sold 3,526 boxes of Girl Scout cookies. Someone just said, no way. Most women who've sold Girl Scout cookies, if you sell 300 or 400 boxes, that is a big deal. 3,526. How'd she do it? Ask. She lived in New York, high population concentration, right? She would go into high-rise apartment buildings and condos, and as people would come down in the morning and back from work, she would just be there. Did you buy your cookies yet? Did you buy your cookies yet? Well, you want to buy some cookies? And if she bought one, they'd say, well, you want to buy two? Don't you know people? She would just ask. Then one day, she finds herself at 14 years old. She wrote a book called How to Sell More Cookies, Condos, Cadillacs, Computers, and Everything Else. And she was the keynote speaker at Radio City Music Hall to the million-dollar roundtable of insurance salesmen, all people who'd sold over $1 million in commissions and all this stuff. And she's up there talking to 1,000 people. At the end of her talk, she says, I want you all to look under your seat. You'll find a 3x5 card. Take that out and write a number between 5 and 10 on the card. So everybody did. And she said, that's how many boxes of Girl Scout cookies I want you to buy for me today as you leave here. That day, she sold 7,000 boxes of Girl Scout cookies. She's in the Guinness Book of World Records. Before she retired, she sold over 32,000 boxes. Isn't that astounding? Hasn't been beaten yet. Okay. But what does she do? Ask. Very powerful tool. Now, she had one final clause, a little phrase she says. SW. What does that mean? Some will, some won't. So what? Someone's waiting. So if you ask enough people, eventually someone's going to say yes. If I asked everyone in this room, do you have a red car? Eventually someone would say yes. It doesn't matter. If you ask enough people, you're going to get your dream met.
I don't think that equality of opportunity is a problem. I think that's a great thing, and that anyone with any sense champions equality of opportunity. I mean, even if you're purely selfish, say, and purely self-centered, you'd want to set up an economy where everyone who had ability could be maximally exploited by everyone else, because then we can all benefit from each other's talents. And so equality of opportunity is an absolutely useful fundamental principle.
So where's
but
the
that
problem?
Has nothing to do with equality of outcome. Those things aren't even in the same conceptual universe. And to strive for equality of outcome is, well, it's a fool's game and likely to be extraordinarily, it has proved to be in the past, extraordinarily dangerous as well as impossible. So, I mean, one of the things we know, for example, is that, I don't know to what degree it's common knowledge in Scandinavia, but the biggest differences between men and women in the world in terms of temperament and interest are in Scandinavia, and they've maximized as a consequence of your egalitarian policies.
What do you mean by that?
It means that the more egalitarian your state, the bigger the personality differences between men and women. That's like the...
How do you measure that? How do you know that?
Oh, well, psychologists have perfected, at least to some degree, the measure of personality over the last 30 years with very advanced statistical models. And so what you do is you offer men and women well-validated tests of preference and of personality. And you do that all across the world with tens of thousands of people in multi-country samples. And then you look at the difference between men and women. And then you rank order that by wealth and egalitarian social policy. And what you find is the more egalitarian the society, the more different the men and women become. I think that equality of opportunity is a perfectly reasonable proposition. I mean, I have a daughter and a wife. I do everything I possibly, and many, many female clients and who I've consulted with and helped, and in many cases helped accelerate the development of their career tremendously. It's obviously of great utility to encourage forward striving in young people and people in general. That's not the issue in the least. The issue is the outcome.
Why do you think the outcome and these countries where the outcome is more equal, why do you think that leads to a bigger differences between?
Oh, because there's only two reasons that men and women differ. One is cultural and the other is biological. And if you minimize the cultural differences, you maximize the biological differences. So, I know everyone's shocked when they hear this. This isn't shocking news. People have known this in the scientific community for at least 25 years. And it's been replicated in the last month three times in three separate samples, including in Science, which is the world's greatest scientific magazine by a large margin. And it isn't a small effect, it's a huge effect.